Tissue FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thank you, Jenny Green. It's Tuesday the 13th of April and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Warren Gatland on a very different Lions tour.
Things that we would have done in the past, we did a lot of community stuff that probably doesn't get a lot of coverage, but in terms of players going to schools and open training sessions and hospital visits and things like that, and the way things look, we're not going to get an opportunity to do those things. It's sort of been very much a part of what the Lions have always been about.
Athletics icon Colin Jackson gets us focused for a big year on the track. Plus in football, there are Champions League nights in Paris and Seville. Mark Langdon joins us as Mbappe is ready to rock.
There's always a lot of talk that when players go one-on-one against Manuel Neuer, they sometimes get afraid. What goes through your mind?
Hey, I love to play against the best player in the world, and Manuel Neuer is one of the best keeper in the history of the game. And no, I don't have any pressure. We play in the final against him. We didn't score, but now it was another game. I scored 2 goals, but I will play again one time against him, and I hope to score again.
Plus, we're live to West Cork to get the lowdown on how our rowers keep those medals coming.
Coming down to 100 metres to go, and it's Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan in front, and there is clear water between them and the German boat. And we're looking at the European champions pulling away. It's gold for Ireland, back in the boat for the first time at this regatta since they won their world championship 2 years ago. And here they are, European champions on top.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. Thank God I got to read today's date because I just remembered tomorrow is my father's birthday.
Oh, I've been the pressy.
That was a lucky one, wasn't it?
Brilliant.
Obviously, I don't care. I only remembered reading the date like about 40 seconds ago.
Good timing that the restrictions are lifted a little bit and you can go outside your 5 kilometres and you can meet outside with other family members.
Brilliant. And stay inside my county.
You're sorted, so.
Simple as.
Ted Walsh. Tonica, there wasn't.
What's that?
Ted Walsh has got it all. He doesn't really have a need for a Prezi Ruby. Just a bit of time with his grandkids, I'd say, would be heaven for him.
I'd say last Saturday's Grand National would have been the Prezi he was looking for, but he didn't get that, unfortunately. I'm afraid double shuffle falling in front of him.
Still on over him.
I was about to say, Donica, do you know him at all?
Double shuffle falling in front of him, put paid to that. But anyway, I'm afraid there's not a whole pile we can do about that right now. But Donners Warren Gatland has named his coaching ticket, management ticket, training ticket, what's the right phrase for it?
That's it, his coaching team to head out for South Africa. So it includes Leinster's Robin McBride, Steve Tandy and Gregor Townsend from Scotland. Tandy, renowned for being involved with the Ospreys, but has led Scotland's defence over the last while. Gregor Townsend will look after attack and Neil Jenkins is on kicking and skills. It's a tight group, to be fair. I thought there might be one or two more coaches involved in it, but I think Warren is
like
very
who, Donica?
I think maybe it's a line out specialist short. And look, you're going to say
like who, Donica?
The shameless plugs. I thought someone like Steve Bortwick might have been in the running. Obviously, I think they've missed
the jump.
We
didn't, Donica.
Yeah, I think they've missed the jump with not having Paulie involved. I think we've seen what's happened with Ireland over the Six Nations, not only at line-out time, but at breakdown as well. And as well, representation is important. There is no Irish or English coach on the coaching ticket. I know Robin's involved in Leinster, and that's brilliant that he'll have an idea of it, but when it comes to a fight for positions, it's only right that someone like Gregor Townsend fights for someone like Finn Russell. You just have to, if he's leading your attack, you have to back him. So look, I wouldn't have been surprised as well if the Lions were brave and tried something like Scott Robertson from the Crusaders or someone like Jason Riles from the Melbourne Storms, who's involved with England, and Eddie Jones. He didn't get over for the Six Nations because of COVID, but stimulating players is a massive thing at the Lions. And Marie and Ruby, I can tell you, a training session at the Lions is like something you've never ever seen. It is the cream, it is the elite from everywhere. Like I just remember one training session we had in Penny Hill before we left, and unfortunately it was one where Gerry Flannery got injured, but it was like nothing I've ever seen before. When you have the quality of players around the place, and if they're not getting nuggets every day, they're the spikiest characters you could come across boss. You're dealing with the main egos in every team. So getting the coaching ticket correct and balanced is really important, and plus getting buy-in from all of them. But that's why I like it being small and tight, and I think they, you know, they'll have their work to do. It's going to be a tough tour, but I think he's put good people around him.
You said stimulation there. I thought you meant would need to be encouraged, but it's not. It's obviously, listen to you, it sounds like it's the opposite. It's to keep them all almost in check.
Yeah, yeah, 100%, because every one of, like, Ruby, a really difficult thing is between the second and third tests, you're dealing with massive egos. Players that probably would never have not been picked for any team since they were, like, 8 years of age, and then they're left out of the pinnacle of the sport. And, you know, trying to get the balance in that is a massive balancing act with management. But as we all know, it's being honest is the key side of that.
What we do know as well, it's going to be a very different Lions tour because of the current situation with COVID-19 and the lack of fans everywhere. So let's hear what Warren Gatland had to say about that.
The biggest loss for us is possibly that Sia Reid and the fans. I don't think people realise how important that is to the players. To me, the fans and the travelling supporters are as much of what the Lions is about. It's almost as important, as big as the matches and the games and the players. And so they're going to be a massive loss. And I just love that the fact that bringing people from four different nations together to support one team, and that's kind of unique as well and special. We know the challenges around that, and people from different backgrounds and different cultures and stuff, and I get goosebumps thinking about that and thinking about what it does to people and being able to do that. So yeah, that's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a huge loss for us. We're going to be able to do things differently. Still 2 or 3 months away in terms of when things happen. You know, maybe there's things may open up. Maybe there's going to be some relief on people who've been vaccinated to be able to go and get on a plane and perhaps support the Lions. So, but we don't know these things. And like I said, it's like all of us have got to be able to react and change, not monthly, but almost like daily to how things, to events and what happens and what things are put in front of us. So we'll just keep being like flexible on those things and just keep looking ahead and to see how things may change.
And in terms of the schedule for the tour, are you happy enough with the way that's going to work out? There are some suggestions that you may be in a bubble or two bubbles, or how that's going to operate.
Yeah, so we're hoping that the schedule gets finalised this week, and it's pretty. So what I've seen at the moment was there were a couple of options. The option was one bubble in an altitude and sort of based in Johannesburg and playing the matches either in Johannesburg or in Pretoria, sort of a mixture of both. It looks like at the moment, if it does get finalised, that we could be playing flying into Johannesburg the first couple of games there, then going down to Cape Town for three games and potentially the first test, and then back up to Johannesburg for the second and third test. But I'm still waiting for the Lions and for Saru just to finalise those details, who the opposition will be and where the matches will be. But I think that's a likelihood of what's going to happen at the moment. Mm.
So Warren Gatland was speaking to Michael Corcoran a little bit earlier. Donica, we've spoken before about the logistics that go into organising a Lions tour, and just listening to him there and having to figure out bubbles and schedules and players coming from so many different setups. It sounds like an absolute nightmare.
Absolutely. And to be honest, we've been so lucky. Ger Carmody, who's involved with the Irish team, he has led that over the last while. There's a brilliant photo of him with James Bond. And everyone was like, I'd rather have Ger Carmody than James Bond. You know what I mean? He was just so effective at his job and brilliant. And it's really, really important that you have that. But I think Warren made an unbelievable point there about the travelling support, because it's the first time and it's the only time for players where everyone's together, you know what I mean, and everyone really buys in. And like, I've an example of it. We were in Wellington in 2005 and Stephen Jones was in our team room, and I remember I came into the team room and he was there, "Dunners, have a look out the window." And I went to the window and there's a crowd of people just standing outside the window, and as soon as they see you, Marie, they start singing "The Fields of Athenry." And then Simon Easterby came in and they were like, "Easters, have a look out the window," and straight away they're singing "Land of Our Fathers." And you know what I mean, then the funny thing, like someone like Martin Corrie goes to the window and they start booing, you know, like it's just the priceless side of coming together on one tour. So
but that will be a loss. Even the social point of it, from a player's point of view, like you're going over there expecting a very different experience really, but the reality is you're probably not going to be able to do anything except go play your matches and go back to your hotel, which is going to be pretty grim.
Yeah, and look, I'll be honest, I think it's very hard to gel a squad. We tried that in 2005. We all had separate rooms in New Zealand. We went in two bubbles. It was one of
was
us
that Clive Woodward's tour?
Yeah, down in
two. Yeah, that was a disaster, full stop.
I actually enjoyed it. I think it was one of the only people to come away from it going, "That wasn't bad crack." But
that's a tour you never even saw Brian O'Driscoll.
Didn't see him for about 3 weeks. Or Paulie. They were all up getting ready for the first test and we were down in Invercargill.
Did you just kind of feel like the B team then? You did.
We used to sing songs, Ruby. We'd be on a plane and we'd be singing, "We're Driftwood touring with the Lions. Only play on Tuesdays, Tuesdays." Or, "If we crash, would anyone care? Does Clive know we're even here?" Yeah. But it was good crack.
It does sound like good crack.
But you can't beat the Lions, the bonding of the Lions tour.
But okay, we're going to leave.
Arrest my case, Your Honour.
Absolutely.
We will be talking about it a lot over the next couple of months as teams come out and we start to speculate about every aspect of it. But we're going to move on to football now. And before we start chatting about the Champions League, I want to very quickly mention the Northern Ireland women's team. They are in their second leg of their playoff tonight against the Ukraine for the Euros. They are going in with a 2-1 lead. And all they have to do tonight is to try and not lose by more than one goal, because away goals count. So Kenny Shields is the manager of them, former Derry City manager. And if they win, they qualify for a major tournament for the very first time in their history, which is absolutely massive. So that is on tonight at 7:30 on the BBC. And it would be worth checking out if you're not watching the Champions League. And Derry City are also playing Shamrock Rovers tonight as well. So there is a lot of football going on outside of the big two games. But to discuss those big two games, Chelsea and Porto and PSG and Bayern Munich, I'm delighted to say that Mark Langdon of the Racing Post is with us. Mark, I guess really the big one is PSG Bayern Munich, because of the game that we got last time out, 3-2 on aggregate, and all to play for really.
Yeah, I think that it was the game of the season so far. It's felt like a very long season, and at times I think you've wondered sort of what the whole point of it is, as well as it's just game after game. But this was spectacular in the first leg. Bayern Munich created a lot of chances, missed Lewandowski, and therefore passed up on those opportunities, could only score two goals. Paris looked dangerous on the counter-attack every time they went forward, particularly with the pace of Neymar and Mbappe on the break. And it's set up perfectly now for the second leg, because we just expect more of the same, really. Bayern have got to come forward. Paris Saint-Germain are going to love the sort of open spaces that Bayern usually leave behind them, and so I can only expect another game like that we got last week at the Allianz. You're never quite sure what Paris Saint-Germain are going to do, because they are capable of throwing in some absolute shockers, but I think all things being equal, it should be a brilliant game again tonight.
Mark, they have collapsed in second leg ties before against Barcelona and Man United, and Bayern Munich have scored 44 goals in their last 11 Champions League games away from the Allianz Arena.
Yeah, it's definitely not all over. That there's, you know, in some games where a team's got that sort of, you know, three away goals and that they're going into the home leg, you feel like the tie is absolutely done, because Bayern Munich have, know they've got to score a couple of goals. In reality, probably got to win by at least two, but they are capable of doing that. And Barcelona nearly pulled back the deficit they had against Paris Saint-Germain in the last game. I mean, Paris Saint-Germain had a 4-1 lead in that game it really could have been sort of level by half time. Messi missed a penalty, they hit the woodwork, they created and missed chances, and Paris Saint-Germain just didn't turn up, and they are capable of just throwing in, like I mentioned earlier, some just absolute shockers out of nowhere. Marquinhos, their captain and real leader at the back, is out injured, so that kind of counteracts against the fact that Lewandowski is missing for Bayern Munich. Both teams have got key absentees. It's rare at this stage of the season that you're able to select your best 11, you know, just because of the knocks and suspensions and all that kind of thing. So it's to be expected that there are players missing. I would imagine that Paris would do it. It's quite a big advantage to have that 3-2, but it wouldn't surprise me if there were a few scares along the way before it was all over.
Especially when you consider that Bayern Munich had 31 shots on goals last time round, so it could be an ominous night for PSG if they don't turn up. But just off the pitch, really, Bayern are starting to have, or continuing to have, their own kind of struggles, and Hansi Flick now has been linked with the German national job as well. So there's a bit of unsettlement there.
Yeah, this was a real sort of bizarre row, really, that just boiled over prior to the weekend game against Hertha Berlin, where Hansi Flick has been quite strongly linked with becoming the next German national team boss. And I think he's always felt like that would kind of be his job. He doesn't feel like a Bayern Munich manager. He doesn't grab the limelight. He's not really after the headlines. He's not a glamour manager in the way that sort of Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, you know, Diego Simeone, these type of characters. He's just a real quiet man that probably is more suited to being a national team manager. He's had sort of bust ups with Salihamidzic, the sporting director of Bayern Munich, and Hansi Flick was asked, you know, quite directly, will you still be the Bayern Munich manager next season? And he didn't give an answer, which that kind of no comment usually means no in those situations. So I think that there's a sort of growing belief that Hansi Flick will become the next German national team manager. That in place would mean, you know, Bayern on the lookout for a new boss themselves. And Hansi Flick will be judged this season on what he does in the Champions League. A lot of these super clubs, it's taken for granted that you win your domestic title, even though the Paris Saint-Germain are actually in second spot at the moment in France. But it's assumed that you'll win domestically, and it's what you can do in the Champions League. And a quarter-final exit, albeit if it's sort of in a spectacular game, will be seen as a failure. So Hansi Flick, he's a world champion. He won the Bundesliga last season. He won the Champions League. You're only as good as your last game at Bayern Munich. And so therefore, there's big pressure riding on this match for him, and sort of what kind of legacy he maybe leaves behind if he is to depart in the summer.
I think that sums up all sport, Mark, to be honest with you. But Chelsea, they're two up against Porto. We're making a case for Bayern Munich. How do you make one for Porto?
Oh, it's really difficult. I suppose what you say is that West Brom beat Chelsea 5-2, you know, was that the last weekend back? So about 10 days ago. So it's about the only bad result that Thomas Tuchel has had since he became Chelsea manager. That was down in part as well to the early sending off for Thiago Silva. So I think Porto probably needs something like that to go their way, a red card, you know, a penalty, and to sort of get yourself into a strong position that way. I think if it stays 11-11 and that there are no kind of mishaps really from Chelsea, it will be difficult for them to throw away what is a healthy advantage. A really weird tie, this one, because both legs are being played in Seville, but you know, because Chelsea were nominally seen as the away team last time, they've got the two away goals, kept a clean sheet. It's a really strong position to be in. Porto have got one of their sort of main men back. He was suspended last week, Sergio Oliveira, a very influential player for them, was the hero against Juventus in the last round, in the last 16. But Chelsea have shown very few signs of being capable of throwing away this very strong position that they've got themselves in.
So will they be playing Liverpool in the semi-final then, Mark?
No.
I thought that Liverpool would have had enough against Real Madrid in that first leg. I was really disappointed with Liverpool's performance. So I'd have to say no. I think that 3-1 maybe with the Anfield crowd would be retrievable in an empty stadium. I'm not sure that Liverpool are playing well enough now to to win that tie. They might be able to win the game, but it was such a non-performance from Liverpool last week. Interesting to sort of hear what Jurgen Klopp said, that, you know, about the training ground mentality maybe, and the fact that Real Madrid are playing at their training ground didn't give it the vibe and feel of a Champions League quarter-final. It's certainly how Liverpool played the game, not how you expect any team to approach a Champions League quarter final. They've got to be better. I'm sure they will be better. They've just probably given themselves too much to do, although I think I've said that before in the Champions League, and as far as Liverpool are concerned, and that they've managed to pull it round.
They most certainly did. In Athens one night, was it? Were they training?
They've had a few in Istanbul. They were 3-0 down against a brilliant Milan team, and then against Barcelona in the Champions League, not last season, the season before. They were in an impossible position at Anfield and managed to pull that one back the year they won it.
They surely did, Mark. In other news, I see Paris Saint-Germain, Real Madrid and Inter Milan are all showing interest in Jesse Lingard. But Ollie not just taking back to United, no?
No, I think this is perfect for Manchester United, isn't it? Because it feels like he's adding another zero on his transfer fee every time he scores another goal. I'd be surprised if that was a move he were to make. I don't see it really. I think that this is probably agents just trying to strike while the iron is hot in terms of Lingard. You know, he's been the standout player in recent months in the Premier League, surplus to requirements. I would still have fought at Manchester United because he wants to play regularly, and he's not going to do that while Bruno Fernandes is in the Manchester United team. And the kind of clubs that you've mentioned him being linked with there, I don't see him being the case where he would play every week for them either. And you can sort of go through them sort of individually, particularly Inter have got potentially on the horizon some very serious financial problems. Their Chinese owners are almost certainly sort of pulling the plug on big expenditure, so you might see more outs than ins, I would have thought, at Inter in the summer, which could be of interest to anybody trying to maybe buy Lukaku or Lautaro Martinez. But Inter have gone to United before, and they've done well out of the signings that they've got from there. I just don't see it with Lingard. I can see him staying in the Premier League.
But Mark, when you look at Barcelona's spreadsheet or even Real Madrid's, what difference does it make if Inter Milan are losing money? They're all
Yeah, they are all losing money. I think the difference is to how easy you find it to refinance the club and to bring in new monies would probably be the difference. Real Madrid, of course, infamously sold their training ground once when they were looking to raise capital, and sort of nothing really changed apart from the fact they were given a load of money for the training ground. Barcelona are promising that they'll be able to bring new finance in with the new president, Laporta, or returning president, at least. I think in terms of the Chinese ownership, Inter, they've got it's private. So, and the owners have said, Suning have said, that they're basically cutting back all of their businesses. And, you know, Inter have spent a lot of money in the last couple of years to make sure that they're about to win the title in Italy. But it seems unsustainable, I would have thought. And, it could be a difficult summer for them. They've got a highly paid manager and some world-class stars like Lukaku. So there could be some value to be had.
It's obviously their balance sheet and not the spreadsheet you'd want to look at. Mark Langdon, thanks a million. We're going to take a break.
Breaks aren't working a lot, so you can just talk away there for a minute.
I thought I just sprung one on you there, Marie, for a second. I was thinking, oh my God, what have I just done?
Protein cut chicken breast fillings. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, sport director for the Wings for Life World Run, Colin Jackson, is encouraging runners from beginner to elite to sign up for the 2021 App Run event via the app or at wingsforlifeworldrun.com, with 100% of the €20 entry fee going straight to spinal cord research. This year's event takes place on Sunday, the 9th of May, with worldwide participants all starting at 12 p.m. Irish time. And I'm delighted to say that Colin Jackson is on the line to talk to us about this run and to talk to us about everything else that is happening with athletics over the next few months. Colin, how are you?
I am very well indeed. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on the show today.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I know we spoke to you last year, and a lot has happened since then. So before we get into what is hopefully going to happen a little bit later on, do you want to just tell us quickly about the run and how important it is?
Well, you know, I think it's for us the biggest single fundraising event for Wings for Life, the foundation itself. And as you mentioned there, we're all for raising money for spinal cord injury research, which is so underfunded. But this particular world run is an exciting one because, of course, it doesn't have a finish line, which allows everybody to take part, because we have something called the catcher car, which is our virtual finish line. And when a catcher car catches you, that's the end of your race. So you could go 2 kilometres or you could go 50 kilometres. It just depends how good you are or what you want to do and how you want to engage with the whole programme.
Ruby, that would be good for horse racing, wouldn't it?
I think I'd want to be on a horse, Marie, to tell you the truth. I'd be caught pretty quick if I was on my own 2 feet.
Colin, so let's have a chat then about the Olympics, because we are starting to build up to them over here. It does feel like they're coming around the corner, but it's such a difficult time for the athletes, I think, because there's so much outside noise. There's been a delay. There's just been training without the traditional events, the traditional build-up. Some people are trying to qualify. Some people are already qualified. Some people probably don't even know if they're qualified. So it is difficult for them.
Yeah, it is a very tricky time for any athlete who's trying to get to the Olympic Games to negotiate. Trying to get quality competition when you want it, trying to steer your training program so you hit peak performance at the time you want to be at peak performance. And I think this is one of the most challenging things, not just for the athletes, of course, but for their coaches, because a lot of them rely on their coaches to be able to have the knowledge to get them in great shape when it really matters. But I think one of the, and it sounds odd when I say this, but the...
Oh, we've lost Colin.
It did sound odd, he was right.
Yeah, he is.
What a cliffhanger to go on.
I know, yeah. Just waiting and waiting. What was he going to say next?
What were you going to ask, Ruby? You looked like you were...
I was going to ask him. Look, the Olympics were, for an athlete that had like such a career, the Olympics probably weren't the highlight of his career. I mean, his best place was in Seoul in 88, but like when he went to Barcelona and he won the heat in the first round and ran sort of 13-10 and looked nailed on, that time would have won the final. But he picked up an injury and never quite got there. But like for someone as high profile as him and for the talent he had, it never really happened for him at the Olympics.
Well, that's Colin Jackson is back, so you can ask him yourself.
I wonder, was he listening? You were talking about him when he wasn't standing behind me.
Ruby was being brave, Colin, when you weren't around.
I wasn't being brave, but like, the Olympics is such a special event and occasion. And yet for you, Colin, like, all right, in 88 you had a silver medal, but Barcelona was probably your year. And the heat went well and you picked up a little injury. Like, how frustrating must that have been to be at an Olympics knowing you could run the times that would win you gold and not being able to do it?
It is the most irritating thing ever, because your dream is to become an Olympic champion. You know, the title that's right there in front of you that you can obtain. It wasn't like I wasn't good enough or I didn't have the capabilities or I wasn't the best athlete in the world. I had all the right attributes to become the Olympic champion in that particular year. And so to pick up an injury at that critical moment just, I guess, proves to everybody how fragile athletes can be. But also for you are devastated, because it's not just you've worked for 4 years. There's a whole team of people that have worked alongside you for 4 years to try and get you to that starting line in the best shape you possibly can to allow you to win the Olympic title. So you can imagine the frustration and the burden that I felt, that I'd let so many people down.
I actually interviewed Sonia Sullivan a little while ago, and we were talking about that exact thing and just how difficult it was almost to recover from the disappointment of not fulfilling the dreams of everybody at home, more so nearly than her own dreams. How did you cope with that? Because she said that there wasn't enough people around for her to talk to, and maybe if she talked about it a little bit more that she would have got through it quicker.
Yeah, I think that's the same. Well, I felt I was spending a lot of time personally trying to make people feel better, because people seemed to be more devastated than I was that I didn't win the title. So, you know, it was a difficult time. But like Sonia, you know, the foreign year we could go to a world championships and make a difference, you know, tell the people of the world how good we can potentially be. So, you know, I followed up the following year, went to the World Championships, became the world champion, and of course broke the world record in the process. So just to kind of just say to yourself, right, I can do it. I can compete at the highest level when it really matters. But you know, the funny thing about it, when I crossed the line after winning the world title and breaking the world record, all I did in my lap of honor, I kept going around thinking, see, why didn't I do this last year? Why didn't it happen last year? You're never happy, are you?
When you ran 12.91 in Stuttgart, did you think it would be 13 years before somebody beat it?
No, I didn't think it'd go 7 months because I thought I'd run faster. It wasn't a perfect race for me. You know, there was lots of elements that went wrong, and I did think the record for myself was going to last that long. But yeah, obviously, when you try it yourself, you realise that, oh, okay, perhaps it is a pretty stiff world record for people to beat.
You say it wasn't a perfect race for you. It's the word that interests me, perfect. What is perfect? Yeah. Do we strive for perfection that we never know what it really is?
I think you do strive for perfection. And in the meantime, if you don't hit it, excellence is usually enough to win. So I knew what certain things you do well. So, example, hurdles, 10 obstacles in the way. And I knew in the World Championships, I did hurdles 6 and 7 atrociously badly. And so it didn't set me up properly for hurdle 9 and 10. So I knew I was capable of doing hurdle 6 or 7 better, which would allow 9 and 10 to get better. So those are the type of things that you look for. And you hope that you can tie a whole series of hurdles together well to get the ultimate performance. But I just strung kind of 6 or 7 okay away, and that was enough to be the world record holder.
Colin Ruby mentioned your record and your 60-metre indoor went with Grant Holloway. Can I ask, do you drop him a text message and say congratulations, or is there bitterness? Are you like, oh, that was a good one that I've eventually lost?
No. I speak to Grant quite a lot, actually. So it was absolutely fine. You know, I know what he's capable of. I know his potential. And for me, he is one of the most talented athletes that I've ever seen. I mean, potentially, he could be the world record for 400-metre hurdles as well as 110-metre hurdles. That's how good an athlete that he is.
It feels a lot like athletics is changing, that we have athletes now kind of travelling around, chasing times, and championship running then is something different completely. What do you think?
Mm. Yeah, there can be that case. I think it depends what their coaches set them up to do initially. You know, some of the coaches are more interested in just getting them to win great titles when it really matters. Fantastic. Some athletes, you know, will just try and make as much money as they possibly can because that's what's going to be more important for them. So that means that they'll run a lot more on the circuit. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. I am all for whatever you choose, whatever you want to do, as long as you don't take drugs, I'm happy.
Yeah, I think that's a good starting point. Colin, when we're looking to Tokyo, but looking back to Rio, London, etc., we had Usain Bolt, Dave Radisha, Mo Farah. Big names. Who are going to be the big names in Tokyo?
I'd watch out for a young Norwegian by the name of Carson Warholm in the 400-metre hurdles. He's been very close to breaking Kevin Young's world record, and Kevin set that world record in 1992. So he's an incredible athlete that we should definitely look out for. And there's a new little female sprinter by the name of Christy Richardson, who's incredible. She just ran 10.72, the 6th fastest time of all time. Just last weekend, and she has got incredible pedigree, so I'm expecting fireworks from her. But of course, when you talk about the US athletes, they've got to do their US championships and qualify for their team first, so she's got to get over that hurdle first. But if she does make it to Tokyo, boy, she's going to be one to watch.
It's going to be different though, isn't it? We were talking a little bit earlier about the Lions Tour and how different it's going to be, that the players are pretty much going to be going over there playing rugby and going back into their bubble and probably spending a lot of time in hotel rooms. It's going to be very different for the Olympic athletes that go over this time round as well.
Yeah, I think because you won't be allowed out, really. You see, the Olympic Village is very much like a bubble anyway, because nobody can get in and out apart from the athletes and the people working there. So you're already kind of used to that bubbling situation. And you don't really traipse between, you know, the US festival is, you don't tend to go across to the UK one. You just kind of keep events to events and nation to nation. So you're quite isolated in that way anyway. But I think the spoils will be the fact that you won't be able to go out and experience Japan. Go to the great places that you may want to visit, unfortunately. So, yeah, that's the sad bit for the athletes, I feel. And because the Olympic Games is not just about the competition, it's that whole package that goes hand in hand with an Olympic experience.
Colin Jackson, thanks so much. And just once again to remind people, if you've just tuned in, that Colin is the sports director for the Wings for Life World Run, and they're encouraging lots of runners from all different types to sign up for the app run, and that can be found on wingsforlifeworldrun.com. Colin, thanks so much, and I hope that the Olympics are exactly what we expect, and good fun and lots of entertainment, and I think we'll definitely need it by the end of the summer. We'll talk to you
Take care.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Tasty Tuesdays from Apache Pizza. Buy one large pizza and get a second large pizza for only €2. Available only on Tuesdays. Terms and conditions apply. Order now at apache.ie.
At AXA, storm damage won't stop us. North fallen trees. Weather,
you can have your fun.
With AXA Home Insurance, we'll pay the cost of alternative accommodation until your home is fit to live in again. Together, we've got this. AXA, know you can. Policy terms and conditions apply. If your home is damaged, we will pay the reasonable cost of similar alternative accommodation if you cannot live there whilst it's being repaired. Alternative accommodation is subject to an upper limit as specified on your policy. AXA Insurance stock is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Game on 2FM.
Last weekend, we were absolutely spoiled for sport. There was just so much, we couldn't watch it all, but we cannot let the next couple of days go by, or today go by, without delving deep into the performances of our rowers at the European Rowing Championships in Italy, because they were absolutely phenomenal, and it's probably just a testament to them that we nearly expect them to be phenomenal every single time they go out. And I'm delighted to say that Kieran McCarthy from the Southern Star joins us to talk us through all of these great performances. Kieran, I suppose you're not surprised anyway that they came home with a bag full of medals.
Now, another incredible performance, Marie, at Europeans for the Irish rowers. And you're right there, phenomenal is the word to describe what they achieved last weekend. Ireland sent over a team of 17 rowers to the Europeans. That's 8 crews. And 6 of those 8 crews got through to the A-finals on Sunday, which was incredible. And from those 6 A-finals, we got gold with Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy in the lightweight men's double, and a brilliant silver medal for the women's 4. So a superb performance in Italy last weekend.
Really was, and I suppose we're kind of used to have seen the likes of Paul and Fintan doing really well, but was there anyone that surprised you?
The women's 4 was a fantastic result. They got a silver medal there, and they're a crew that's not yet qualified for the Olympics in Tokyo, so, and it's a fairly new crew as well. Emily Hegarty from Skibbereen is new into that crew, so what that means, this crew are going forward to a final Olympic qualification regatta in Lucerne next month. There's 2 spots left at the Games in Tokyo up for grabs. And their performance at the weekend puts this crew right in the mix to grab one of those 2 spots, because they finished less than half a second behind a really, really highly fancied Dutch crew. So that means this Irish crew is right where they need to be right now. So at the moment, the entire Rowing Ireland team has set out in Varese in Italy for a 5 or 6 week training camp ahead of the next World Cup in Lucerne and that final Olympic qualification regatta. So fingers crossed that women's 4 will go there and book one of the places in Tokyo.
So Emily Hegarty, Emer Lam, Afric Kyo and Fiona Murta, I follow a good few of them on Instagram, and I see how much training that they are doing, but they look like they're just improving all the time.
Yeah, exactly. I was chatting to Emily on Monday, and she said they put in such a great winter's training that they felt themselves going into the Europeans that they were quite fast, and they're delighted that they're able to show that speed at the Europeans over the weekend. And like I said, to finish second behind a very good Dutch crew puts them in really good shape ahead of the final Olympic qualification regatta.
Kieran, is that boat set now, or are they still competing to get in the boat? When you were chatting to Emily, is she kind of assured of her place? Because that's what is driving all this, the competition for places.
There's huge competition for places, especially in the Irish heavyweight women's crew at the moment, because we have that women's 4 and we have a women's pair already of Aileen Crowley and Monica Dukarska, 2 Kerry women who've already qualified that boat for the Olympics. So Ireland now is a really strong pool of heavyweight women. So those crews are set for the next World Cup. So that 4 that got the silver in Varese on Sunday, they'll go forward now to the to the final Olympic qualification regatta. So, like I said, fingers crossed, they get there, they qualify for the Olympics. And then a couple of weeks after then, we'd expect the crews for the Olympics to be confirmed.
In the lightweight women's double sculls, you have Aoife Casey and Margaret Cremin. Are they in a similar situation as regards qualifying for Tokyo, or are they going to be better?
Exactly, Ruby. They're in the same situation as the women's four, so they're going to that qualification regatta in Lucerne in a couple of weeks' time. So they have an outside chance, I think, of getting to Tokyo, because it's a very young crew. Aoife Casey is actually the daughter of Coach Dominic Casey, who we all know from his work with Skibbereen Rowing Club and Gary and Paul in Rio 2016. But Aoife is only 21 years old. Margaret Crimmin from Rochestown is only 22 years old. So they're a very, very young crew. So if they get to Tokyo, I think it's almost bonus territory. It would be a fantastic experience. But they're probably looking to Paris in 2024 as a more realistic target for them. But still, they're heading to the qualification regatta off the back of a fifth-place finish at the Europeans. And that was their best finish as a lightweight double. So they'll be high in confidence too.
We were speaking to Colin Jackson a little bit earlier about the pressure that can be put onto an athlete when they're heading into an Olympic Games, and they've nearly everything done bar collect the gold medal off the podium. And with Paula Donovan and Fintan McCarthy, it does feel like the same. I know we're probably getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but I guess when you see them doing so well and knowing what they're capable as well, it does feel like the expectation is on them.
100% real. Like, there's an expectation now that Paul and Fintan will go to Tokyo, and they're really in the middle, in the conversation for that gold medal. That's where they're at right now. We've got to remember, this is a fairly new crew. That was just their third international regatta together. They were put in the boat back in 2019, and they won a silver at their first World Cup together. Then they won world gold in their second event together. Now in their third event, they've won a European gold. So they've set a very, very high standard for themselves. That's no surprise when we're talking about Paul O'Donovan. Like, that man is a phenom when it comes to rowing. Like, at 26 years of age, he already has an Olympic silver medal, 4 world titles, 2 European golds to his name. And he's still only 26 years of age. He doesn't turn 27 till later this month. So you've Fintan McCarthy now in the boat with him. So Paul is the common denominator there. Like, Paul, I don't want to say he guarantees success, but he's the best lightweight men's rower in the world. So with Gary in the boat, they were world champions. With Fintan in the boat, they're world champions. So they're going to go to Tokyo in a really, really good place. So fingers crossed they stay injury-free between now and then, because they're a serious medal prospect for us.
It's like, they've only had 3 competitions together. How much improvement do you think Fintan and Paul could make? Are we talking how many seconds? Can they go 2 seconds, 3 seconds quicker with more practice and more time together?
You wouldn't really put it down to seconds, Ruby, because I suppose a rowing race depends on the different conditions, the different course and so on. But to answer your question, they can get better, they can get faster. Paul sat out last year's kind of international season because he's studying medicine at UCC. So the trial and process then, where Gary was in the hunt for that seat, and Fintan's twin brother Jake was in the hunt for that seat as well. So you'd 4 men from the same parish of Effadown and Skibbereen, 2 sets of brothers battling for the 2 seats in the one boat. And a couple of weeks ago, they confirmed that it was Paul and Fintan going together. So they had 3 weeks of training together in the boat before the Europeans, and they won gold. Now they'll have 5 or 6 weeks in Lucerne, for they'll be able to get out on the water every day, good weather, flat water. They'll work on their technique together. They'll get better and better and better. So theoretically, they will get better. They will get faster.
Kieran, this is a complete novice's question now, so please don't cut the head off me. But when you have 4 guys of that talent, why are we going in pairs? Why not put 4 of them in the one boat?
Because when you're talking about lightweight rowing as an Olympic event, the lightweight double is the only lightweight Olympic event
for
men and
women. So it's heavyweight then that Steve Redgrave, etc. were in?
100%. You can put those in a 4 and so on. But at lightweight, it's only the double, and you can only send one double. If you could send 2 doubles, the odds are you're sending 2 Skibbereen boats, because in Gary O'Donovan and Jake McCarthy, you've 2 the next best lightweight rowers in Ireland, but even beyond that, probably in Europe and the world, because Gary, as we all know, is an Olympic silver medalist and a former world champion as well. So we're spoiled for choice in lightweight rowing in Ireland at the moment. And it's just incredible that these 4 men come from the one parish, and then Dominic Casey, their coach, is from the same parish as well. So it's very much a parish of rowers in Effadown, just outside Skibbereen.
And Gary was in 4th spot, and I was reading his quotes afterwards, and he said that he feels he's much closer to the top guys now than he was before.
Yeah, 100%. If you go back to the 2019 Europeans, Gary finished 16th in the single, and at the Europeans last weekend he finished 4th, so he's definitely shown improvement there. He's coming off the back of a really strong winter as well, because he was in the hunt for one of those seats in the lightweight double. Of course he'll be disappointed he's after missing out, and even though those two seats haven't been confirmed for the Olympics, it's looking increasingly likely it is going to be Paul and Fintan. So Gary will go to Tokyo as a reserve. But he had a brilliant performance at the weekend, getting to the A final, finishing 4th. He wasn't really in the medal conversation in the final, to be quite honest. He was just too far back. He was 6th for 3/4 of that race. He made his move in the last 500 metres and passed out 2 boats, but he was still too far away from the top 3 to put himself in that medal conversation. But he did show good form, and he'll hope to build on that going to the next World Cup regatta in Lucerne, because he'll be in the single there again.
Kieran, we know the incredible work that's going on in Skibbereen Rowing Club, and you wrote the book, There's Something in the Water About It. But is there a conveyor belt? Is there younger talent coming through that we don't know of yet that, you know, that you're hearing and seeing about that are going to push Irish rowing on again?
If you look at the moment, the likes of Lydia Heafy, she was at the Europeans as well, and she finished 6th in the lightweight women's single scull A final. She's 23 years old. Like I said, Aoife Casey's 21 years old. So you've all these rowers, these young rowers coming through. You'd have to go back a couple of years ago when there was Shane O'Driscoll and Mark O'Donovan won the World Championship and European gold in the men's lightweight pair. Denise Walsh was another fantastic rower for Skibbereen, but they've kind of exited stage left now, and it's the likes of Lydia, Aoife, Jake and Fintan McCarthy. They're the rowers coming through now from Skibbereen. So the conveyor belt is still very, very strong down there, Donica.
A bit like Paul and Fintan, Sunita is someone as well that there's a huge amount of expectation on. We didn't see her over the weekend, but she is full steam ahead for the Olympics now. But we did see a Russian rower that hadn't been to the fore before come up to the front of the line. Is she the biggest competition now to Sunita?
That looks like it's going to be like that. Maria Wright, Sunita set out the Europeans, but she's kind of gearing up now for World Cup 2 in Lucerne next month. There'll be expectation on Sunita, just like there is on Paul and Fintan, because Sunita is a world champion, European champion. She's the best in the business in the women's single. But rowing is very much a sport of fine margins. If I can just take you back to 2015 for a second, at those World Championships, Gary and Paul O'Donovan took the very last place on offer at the 2016 Olympics. They finished 11th at those World Championships, and they beat the Greek crew in 12th by fractions of a second. Yet that put Gary and Paul into this journey that's taken them to the top of the world. So when it comes to rowing, it's very much fine margins there. So even though the likes of Sunita and Paul and Fintan are, they'll be big favourites to bring home a medal of some colour from the Olympics, you just never know on the day. It depends on conditions, how they're feeling, if they're injury free and so on. So the expectation is that they will do quite well. We just have to keep our fingers crossed that it happens.
Kieran, you mentioned the parish, and we're seeing an awful lot of relations. The Coombs, Gavin Coombs is related to the O'Donovans as well. Is there a place to put in maybe some of those lads in the boat, the Witcherleys, the Darren Sweetnums? If we were looking for heavyweights, they could be the lads to head out there.
I'm not sure there's a heavyweight boat big enough to put the lads to finish with.
They take on too much water.
And Gavin Coombs into it. But yeah, you're right, Gavin Coombs is he's Munster's rising star at the moment. He's first cousins with Gary and Paul. Gavin's mom, Regina, is a sister to Gary and Paul's father, Teddy. So it just shows kind of it's very much in the breeding, it's very much in the DNA in West Cork. Like you know yourself, Donica, rugby is lifting in West Cork at the moment. There's 6 or 7 lads in at Munster. You've Inya Breen and Laura Sheehan in with the Ireland team, and the Rovers too are keeping West Cork in the headlines at the top international level. So yeah, it's full steam ahead for West Cork sport at the moment, and that's good news for me.
Absolutely. We didn't even mention Phil Healy. Kieran, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Quick break and we're back chatting golf.
New cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is now time to turn our attention to golf, and Gary Murphy joins us on the line. Gary, the Masters are done and dusted. Hideki Matsuyama won it, as everyone was probably expecting towards the end of the night anyway. But just as a spectacle and an event, did you enjoy it?
I did. I was half man, half couch for the 4 days. yeah, it's a special tournament every year. I don't think it disappointed in the end. It kind of looked at the start of the back nine that it was going to be, you know, just a stroll in the park for Matsuyama, but you'll always get a little bit of drama when you've two gettable par fives and then the pressure of trying to win his first major. He hadn't won for 3 years, well, nearly 4 years. And, yeah, I thought it was great. It started off on Thursday, the way they had set the course up, like it was going to be, you know, a really difficult week. Justin Rose had a sensational first round, 65. But I think the weather delay really on Saturday evening was where Matsuyama gave himself that breathing space that he needed coming in on Sunday night.
Yeah, Gary, you say the way it was set up on Thursday, the only player to go really low on Sunday was John Rahm, 66. Could he have got going a bit earlier? I know he was coming from the back of having his first child, etc. But level par, his last round was exceptional.
It was. There was only three guys in the top 21 that broke par, and he shot 6 under. So it was an incredible final round. He was just, you know, he was too far back, and just proved his class. But you know, for a guy like him going out on Sunday, there was no pressure on him. Whereas Matsuyama had to sleep on a 4-shot lead and completely different dynamic, but as you say, it was a phenomenal round, and you'd suggest that it's impossible not to see Rahm actually win a Masters in the future. But I think overall, you know, they had a baby the previous week. He didn't have ideal preparation, and that's probably what affected him in the end. But he still tried his very best in 66 with some return.
If Roy Keane was here now, he'd say, sure, he didn't have the baby himself.
He's right. When they were turning, when Matsuyama turned onto the back nine, Gary, if you were carrying his bag, would you have encouraged him to play the last 5-6 holes a bit differently, or would you have allowed him to just go for it the way he was?
I'd have kind of kept the foot down, really. I think, you know, there's no doubt he got very unlucky, or got very lucky on 13 with the bounce. He got a soft bounce, but he got a normal bounce there. It's in the bushes, and, well, not bushes, you'd probably get shot in Augusta for saying that, but in the azaleas. But it's that fine line, you know. Once you start putting doubt into a player's mind to go, listen, you know, we need to kind of protect this, then indecision seeps in, and he was executing really well. So there was no reason why to change the strategy. I think his second shot in 15, that was just a bit of tension. He just got a little bit quick at the bottom, trying to guarantee contact and to cover the distance. And, you know, he got unlucky, really, for it to run all the way through the water. That's what makes that shot so hard. You know, they're afraid of going on the water short, and then if you bullet one, it can go on the water long. So it really is a treacherous hole. But it's just that fine line, Ruby, between, you know, do you keep the foot down? I think 16, he hit a very defensive tee shot, which was understandable because Shoffley had gone on the water in front of him, and that was him gone. And then he was just playing against the scoreboard, really. He just had to stay ahead of Zalatoris, but he played 17 exceptionally well. And then his tee shot, that was the last dangerous shot of the last, you know, and he nailed that down the fairway. And from there, he knew 5 was going to be good enough, so he played it accordingly.
Zalatoris definitely has a lot of new fans, I think, after the weekend. But just on Matsuyama, Gary, could you just maybe explain to us just how big a star that he is, and what it would have been like if there had been press there?
The top Japanese stars generally have their own TV crew that travels around with them, so they get haunted every week, and that pressure is something that's very difficult, and it's affected a lot of them. I mean, there's been some great players coming out of Japan who tried their hand on the PGA Tour, but I just think the cultural difference is huge, the language barrier is huge. But he would have been, I mean, he's under similar pressure every week that Rory had in Paul Rush 2 years ago, and it's exhausting. I think the fact that with COVID, last week was probably a little less than it would normally be. And he's very clever as well. Like, he's able to speak English, but he keeps it down to a minimum. And he's playing that perfectly. Because
Ruby likes that, Gary. He's laughing away here at that.
I wonder how I could have figured that one out for years. Would have been brilliant. Yeah,
a square
yeah,
goal,
I know.
I should have tried speaking Japanese.
Yeah, exactly. So he's, you know, but I thought it was lovely in the Butler cabin that he did it in Japanese as well. And, you know, it's huge for their country. It's the first time that they've ever won Masters. You know, they're a golf mad nation as well. I think there's over 3,500 driving ranges or something in Japan. And it's just brilliant for the game, and especially with Tokyo coming up, he'll be the star there. And it really gives the golf for that Olympics a big lift, because Dustin Johnson, the world number one, is not going to tee it up. So Matsuyama will carry the home hopes for a gold medal in Tokyo.
Well, a bit of luck, he might get himself a gold there, and God knows what sort of reception he'll get. Gary, thanks a million for taking our call. That's all we have time for, folks. Tara Stewart is up next.